Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to The Shift, the podcast that aims to tell the no-holds-barred truth about being a woman post 40, created and hosted by me, writer and broadcaster, Sam Baker. My guest today is the farmer, businesswoman, cook, conservationist, mother, and now writer Helen Raybanks. She has been cooking and baking professionally and domestically for more than 30 years, and with her husband, the writer and farmer, not really in that order, James Raybanks, has turned the farm that has been in their family for generations into a global beacon for regenerative farming. No, I didn't know what that was either. In short, it's farming in nature-friendly ways. Now she's put all that experience of food, farming, and nurturing into one beautiful book, The Farmer's Wife, a moving and honest account of the daily grind of life on a farm as a woman whose work too often goes unnoticed.
It's not represented in many books, it's not represented in many films, and it seems downtrodden, as if it's a kind of negative, bad way to spend your life.
Helen joined me from the Lake District, where she lives with her husband, 4 children, 6 sheepdogs, 2 ponies, 20 chickens, 50 cattle, 500 sheep, and 110 different species of flowers and grasses, to talk about the reality of being a farmer's wife, paying tribute to our foremothers, and the invisible work of wifedom. Yes, it's that domestic load conversation again. She also explained why she's passionate about sustainability and being part of the climate solution, not the problem. What it means to live a good life and the messy, dirty, joyful stuff of life. We're talking at 11 a.m, so tell me what you've already done today.
I have exercised all 6 sheepdogs. I've had them up the fields. James is away in America this week with our 15-year-old. So she's normally the very reliable dog person, and she'll see to them. But I'm doing that, and I've checked around the sheep, which are all in one big mob on this top field here. And I changed the bedding in the shepherd's hut because I have people coming tomorrow. And I've got a friend staying. So she's now taken over with my 2 younger boys. And she's an artist. So they were going to get some paper out and mess about and have some fun. And I think my mum's coming up to do the garden shortly. So I spoke to her. Yeah, it's just a busy, colourful kind of, every day is a bit different. Lots of different things going on, and that's been my morning so far.
So when you set out to write the book, The Farmer's Wife, where did you start in your head? Were you thinking, you know, I love food, I've been cooking for 30 years, I want to write a recipe book? Or were you thinking, I want to give a voice to all these women, you know, farmers' wives, mothers, you know, women who've chosen to work at home? Something else, or all of it?
When I started off, it was very much around the food, and it was about trying to put together some recipes that the kids would maybe take going forwards into their lives in the future. Things that I made regularly that they would save them ringing me up. You know, here's a book. Yeah, yeah. Here's the book. This is how I've made these things. But it very, very quickly changed once I started writing. And the first piece I wrote for, I was putting the proposal together through lockdown, and it was about marmalade. And that piece has made it into the book. And it was about not just me standing on a chair and learning how to make marmalade in a busy farmhouse kitchen. Still didn't really understand it till last year when Mum took me through the process properly. It's a very sort of chaotic mess when you're making marmalade, and I couldn't understand it then. It was about the piece of writing ended up being me learning about these two women that I'm from and the dynamics between them, the relationship. Mum didn't come from a farming background. She married my dad and hadn't learned to cook or do anything housework-y kind of thing. And she came into my grandma's kitchen and had to learn very quickly, because my grandma had moved out of the big farmhouse to let Mum and Dad move in, but it was still her kitchen really for a long time.
This is your dad's.
Yeah,
this
my
is
dad's
your...
mum. So Mum took on the jobs and learned very quickly, and I just learned at her feet. And the writing that I was doing was exploring that relationship. And I just, once I started writing pieces and scenes, the food became secondary. It was always there, and it's there woven through the book, but it turned into being a project much about who I was, where I come from, what is a good life, how did I want to live, and how was I living, and what the choices I'd made. And yeah, the farmer's wife, really, all the women that had come before me doing this.
Yeah, because you, I can't remember if it was the podcast I was listening to or whether you actually wrote this in the book, but you wrote about coming from a long line of women who've cared for families and lived on farms and basically who stitched together the fabric of rural communities but get pretty much zero credit.
Pretty much zero credit. It's invisible work, isn't it, generally? And I think it's not particularly invisible in the families that we're living in. We're very much appreciated by our spouses and, you know, sometimes kids. Some kids don't really appreciate anything you do for them.
No, exactly.
They have to do it themselves. But I felt that society and general culture there isn't that voice of somebody looking after the home and caring and cooking and cleaning and kind of holding up kind of everything. It's not represented in many books. It's not represented in many films. And it's seen as downtrodden, as if it's kind of negative, you know, bad way to spend your life. You're kind of not living your best life if that's all you're doing with it. And I want to
set
the record straight, really, because I don't feel like that.
Like you say, you were a farmer's daughter, but your mum wasn't. And your mum wasn't close to her own mum, was she?
No, she didn't have... She didn't have the best of childhoods. She had a tricky time with her mum. Her mum probably had undiagnosed sort of depression and probably some mental illness. She was grieving because when my mum was six, they lost mum's baby sister, who I'm named after. And that was really tragic. Mum's mum didn't, she wasn't there for her in the same way lots of mums are doing the mum stuff. And so she grew up without that model to her. Yeah, really tough.
Did writing the book help you understand your mum more, or was that something you'd gone through when you were younger?
Definitely writing it helped me understand her more. When you make a narrative out of bits of fragments of conversations and things, it really did sort of put the puzzle pieces together. Yes, definitely. And made me much more compassionate about thinking, you know, I'd gone through a journey with mum, certainly in my teenage years, where I didn't really understand where she was coming from and we were clashing quite badly. And we've come out the other side, particularly when I've had children and she's been there to support me. And I've understood how hard it is. And we were already pretty good, but writing solidified all of that, I think, and being able to just reflect on on why we were like that in my teenage years and why we've, you know, come through it. I'm really lucky that we, you know, nice and close and do lots of things together.
And you live really close to
We do. We do. I've got good family support around. Incredibly lucky. I don't think it's easy to bring up a family without a village, really, in whatever shape or, you know, whatever that looks like. It's incredibly hard. Moving back to where we grew up, James and I, and having both his parents now, just his mom, and my parents around, my sisters around, James's two sisters. You know, we're all a busy family. We don't tend to live in each other's pockets, but we're there to support each other when we need each other.
Because I want to ask you about that, because you, when you were growing up, you didn't want to spend your adult life living on a farm, did you? You didn't want to be an adult, a farmer's wife. You wanted to escape, like so many teenagers do. So tell me what happened.
What happened? I fell in love, basically. So I had all sorts of teenage ideas about being an artist, and I did do my art degree and thoroughly enjoyed it. Those roots are still in me to create work and have a creative life, as well as doing all the busyness of family life on the farm. What happened was, James and I met when I was 18 and got together, and he was going off to Oxford. I finished my art degree and then went with him. And I tried lots of different jobs, and I worked in all sorts of things, from call centres to cafes and bars. And I worked in a hospital getting scans ready as like admin person, office work. Nothing was sitting right with me. And I just, I mean, you're told what you're going to be when you grow up. It kind of echoes through me. It's the worst question we can ask kids. It is the absolute worst. The pressure to be something. What about being yourself and being kind and find a way of making a life that is colourful and interesting, that you can make some money from here, you know, and pay your bills and find the things you enjoy doing? That was never talked about. And I did all these different things, but worked with James and making a life together, really. That's pretty much, that's what happened. Is that, that's how, why we're here. I threw it all in with him and said, we're a team. We're going to do life together. Yeah. I mean, I haven't given up on anything. I feel I've had I'm still, lots of exciting things are happening, lots of challenges, particularly with the farming that we're doing here. I know it makes every day interesting. Yeah, I didn't particularly set out to be a farmer's wife at that age, but now I couldn't be happier doing what I'm doing.
It's like you were saying, when we ask kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And we do it as adults too, don't we? Like the first thing very often that people will say to you when you meet them is, what do you do?
What do you do? Yeah. And it can make you feel so small if the outside world looks on at my life and says, well, that's unpaid and it must be quite privileged because you don't work. You know, who's paying for your life? And I'm thinking, well, everything he's doing, I'm working alongside him and we're doing it together. And maybe he looks like he's the one that's out there earning, but he couldn't be doing that without the support here. And we're working on a farm together. It makes you feel sometimes very small. And I wrote the book in a kind of answer to that. No, there's much more to this life than sort of a drudgery that people think that it must be.
Were you angry when you were writing it?
Moments of, yes. Yeah, I think stereotypes can be quite limiting and damaging to people. There were certain parts of the book I was writing and it took me back to when I did feel small and belittled, as if it wasn't, you know, oh, she's not working, she's got the kids, she's looking after the kids. Well, isn't that like an incredible amount of work? 24/7.
Yeah, well, it's like there's a comment you write about in the book. I think when, I don't know whether it was when you'd had Tom or Isaac, so whether it was your third or fourth, and you were at a party and someone said, oh, she's had another one, so she doesn't have to get a real job.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
I just thought, no one who, and I, you know, I am not someone who has looked after children, but I don't think anybody who had ever looked after children would say that.
No, never. It's as I say, it's 24/7, isn't it? And you don't often give yourself a break to, you know, it's just that constant being needed and in lots of different directions. And it, because it's unpaid and there's no, I mean, job satisfaction is tricky because you're up against it all the time with kids. You can't ever feel like you're always questioning, are you doing a good job?
Well, I think as well, there's a part where you talk about a French story where the woman has to grow lots of arms to get all her tasks done.
Yeah.
And then you go on to kind of outline, like sometimes the children come first, sometimes the farm comes first, sometimes the paperwork comes first, sometimes, you know, the housework comes first.
The errands, all of it. And that's pretty much how my head goes day to day, which task rises to the top to be the priority. And then I focus on that. It leads to quite a busy and interesting life. There's never a dull moment. And I like a challenge.
Do you feel like, you know, obviously you're a team and it's teamwork and the whole thing just wouldn't hang together if you weren't doing all your bits. But like you say, you still get the delivery man who's like, oh, is your husband around? Do you feel like you're a team, that he's the leader?
No, not between us. No, it changes.
Your face is so funny. You're like, as if.
I think people on the outside might think that. Not between us. I mean, we both sort of jostle for who's in charge really all the time about things, but we are a team and we talk things out. I think on a lot of farms, the women are as integral at decision-making as the men are, you know, whatever the setup is. And quite often on some, you know, I know a lot of matriarchal kind of setups that it's quite dismissive to talk about farmers' wives as they're somehow less than. They're not the ones I know.
But it's a complete, it's a complete lack of understanding, isn't it? And it's a society that has evolved where all of the weight is put on work outside the home and what, you know, and this is, I'm just going to massively generalize as usual, but it's like what men do versus the things that like women traditionally do. And I was really interested that you, when you were talking about when you're a teenager, not a teenager, but a student, and you were talking about like not identifying with Ally McBeal and the Spice Girls, so you're probably about 10 years younger than me, and feeling somehow wrong.
Yes, I did feel wrong. I felt out of time quite a lot in moments in my life, and it's led me to writing the book. It's led me to question lots of things, like lots of messages in culture are like, have a life that is more meaningful and more shiny, more exciting, and raising kids, keeping a home and running a farm. I've questioned it. Of course I have. You're fed all this, magazines all the time, people in clean, lovely cut clothes, and there's no dirt on their boots. And it's not real. It doesn't sit well with me. Every, you know, scrolling through Instagram and you're seeing kitchens set up that are beautiful and all staged, and it's not real life, is it? It's not yogurt down the side of the cupboard that needs wiping up and the bins overflowing and the dogs running with muddy footprints. I didn't like a lot of things I was being fed, really. And I just decided I've always just been me. And if James was here, he'd probably say the same. I've had quite a strong sense of myself from when he met me, and I've never let go of that. And I think that probably comes from my mum. She's got a strong sense of who she is, and we're interested in lots of different things, and we've got opinions about things, and we care for our families and look after our farms and our homes.
How old do you think you were when you kind of developed that sense of self? Because as a fellow ginger, I really identified with that.
Yeah, I've never used a bottle on any of it. I've never touched it with anything. It might turn a weird colour if I did.
Yeah, take it from me, it does turn a weird colour. Talking about when you were growing up, and this is a thing that actually so many women say to me, but in different situations, about having to do all the chores at home and their brothers never getting asked to do the chores.
Well, my brother's quite cross that I've written that he didn't do any in the book because apparently he did, but I can't remember.
Yeah, right. What chores did he do? Evidence.
Yeah. I'd like a list, please. Yeah, I mean, I was encouraged to do lots of bits and pieces. I encourage our kids to do lots in the house now because there's only one of me and then there's four of them. So the girls do their own washing now. They're 15 and 17. And the boys, Isaac hoovered yesterday, and Tom will begrudgingly feed the dog or do a few basics. He's five. But I think as everybody has to pull their weight just as much outside as they have to do inside. And that's how it works. And it didn't work when I was young with my brother. I definitely know he got away with more. I do. I stand by my book. I stand by
Sorry, Helen's brother. Yeah, sorry. We don't believe you.
That's how things were. I do think things, if we're going to change anything, how are we going to do that? We need to set examples in our own homes as mums and dads, you know, dads doing bits and pieces as much as the mums. And we need to try and model it. Kids don't do what we tell them to do. They do what they see us doing. And our kids see a family pulling together outside and inside.
The difference is, I suppose, that primarily
boys, home-based.
Your boys do chores inside the house, which arguably your brother didn't, and your mum's brother before that. But also your daughters are very, very actively involved in the farm, aren't they?
They are, yeah. Very strong, capable young women outside working. I'm hoping to bring them up to understand what goes on inside the home is as important as what happens outside. Yeah, I think I'm trying as a parent to model both things, the home life inside and responsibilities and caring for others and cooking for others is really important.
Can you imagine your girls taking over the farm?
Oh, yes, quite soon, actually. I feel like our 15-year-old daughter's practically running the show some days anyway. Yeah, she's training her own sheepdog. And if James is away, she's at home with me. She will do most of the outside chores and checking the sheep and going to the cows. Yeah, they're very, yeah, I think that could quite happen sooner than later.
Really? Well, do you think that you and James will find it hard to get out of the way?
No. No.
Said with feeling.
No, I don't think I don't think it's our job to be in their way as they grow up and want to find their place in the world. We're not giving them anything on a plate, that's for sure. They're going to have to work at it and find a business model that works for them to bring income in. And it's tricky because there's four of them. We're going to have to work out a way of sort of sharing things out equally. But we need to, there's lots of conversations to be had about that. But I don't think it's our job to be in their way. It's really tricky for a lot of farms with succession planning and old farmers sticking around and ruling the roost and not giving the younger generation a chance. And I think the countryside and food and farming needs young people involved more than ever.
I mean, you had your own, particularly actually your mother had that, really had that experience, didn't she, of basically your grandparents moving out, but your granddad still being
still
the boss, but not the doer.
Yes, the boss, but not the doer. Very oppressive kind of situation. It doesn't lead to very nice atmosphere. I've seen that. I've grown up with it. I've been around it a lot, and I don't want to do that for our kids.
I want to talk to you a little bit about sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Is it regenerative farming?
That's the sort of buzzword.
Is that the phrase?
That's the buzzword that everybody's using. It's sort of going back to like traditional mixed farming that now we know a lot more about soil health and, I mean, the crisis with biodiversity loss, climate change and global warming. We know so much more. And when you know more, I think you have to do better. And on our farm, what we're doing and trying to do better is to manage particularly the fields, not just the edges and plant the hedges, which we've done an awful lot of. We've done miles of hedgerow replanting, and not just putting the trees in, but consider the fields as a whole and the soil underneath, because everything comes from healthy soil. All life and food and, you know, for nature, for the livestock, for us, for healthy food, it's coming from good, healthy soil. It should look like rich chocolate cake when you get into there. And it should have a good cover of grasses and plants and different species on there, like a thatch, we call it. So in basic terms, we're trying to manage our livestock in a way that is mobbed up into a big group and then pulse grazes quickly and then moves on and gives the land lots of rest. So we're trying to be part of the climate solution rather than the problem as farmers here. And we're trying to inspire other people to maybe learn about this as well.
I'm thinking a few things. And one of that is, does that make any money?
So does it make any money is a great question.
I hate myself for asking it, by the way, but
We have cut our inputs to the farm business dramatically by doing this kind of farming.
So
we're not spending money on bought in feed. We're making very little hay now. We're just doing a minimal sort of crop of hay. So we're not spending money on contractors coming. We're not spending as much at the vets for any antibiotics and treatments. And that means that the livestock that we can rear is off grass, which is grown from sunshine and rainfall. So we're not relying on expensive inputs to the farm. So that means we are turning a profit with a small family farm. We sell pedigree livestock to other farmers, and we have some meat that we sell to family and friends locally from our freezer. We're not getting down the meat route because we're busy with the writing stuff. And it's always a juggle of, you know, how we can do all these different things. Maybe one of the kids might come in and take on doing something like that in the future. One of our daughters is a chef, so she's getting down the food route. But making money, we host different groups and visitors to the farm. I mean, purely farming, we're turning a small profit from it without extra. We run two separate businesses with our writing work and our farm. It has to stand on its own. We don't, you know, subsidize it in any way, shape or form. But we do need general public to understand that regenerative farming is beneficial for nature, for animal health. And it means that the products we'll be selling will be more expensive than the cheap chicken and, you know, out of a shed, and the pork that's raised in also in sheds. And so beef and lamb, and where we eat hog and mutton rather than we would eat lamb, but it is going to be more expensive, and that there's a reason why. It's slower grown, not only an incredibly healthy, nutritious thing to eat, helping nature and putting biodiversity back into the landscape.
It's, I mean, I don't think anybody would disagree with you, but it's hard, isn't it, at a time when everybody's so skint.
Everybody is so skint, and everybody's heads down and working harder and longer. And we need structural change as well as the public to kind of shift their way of thinking about diet, rather than grabbing something that's going to be a quick fix. Maybe choose something that satiates and fills you up for a bit longer. And for me, that's protein. That's definitely eggs and bacon in the mornings, or it's good meat. And a little of it will fill you up for longer rather than hitting the carbs and the sugar, fatty, snacky things that don't keep you going. And fill up on veg, good veg. We need much more support for horticulture in the UK. But we do need structural change, don't we? They say it's food poverty, but it's just poverty. And it needs to be addressed. It's we're in a mess in the country.
Yeah, not to put too fine a point on it.
I haven't gone into that, Sam.
No, I mean, we would be here all day if we started on that.
Yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Owning the farm and being on the farm and what you've been talking about in terms of being part of the solution rather than the problem, how has that affected your approach to cooking and food shopping?
It means that I'm much more aware of what we're growing and producing than I used to be, and less reliant on supermarkets. And you know, I just still go, and I wish I didn't, but I get a local veg box that's grown not far from here and get that regularly. And a lot of my cooking is just simple suppers, nothing complicated. It's meat and vegetables, some fish now and again. And I just try and keep it keep it simple and try not to go to the supermarket you need groceries, you need staples, you need jars and cans and tins and washing powder and all that basic stuff. But the focus for me is on really good meat and good vegetables.
Do you pay more attention when you're in the supermarket to where things have come from?
Yeah, I do notice. I would say I'm not 100% amazing at this. I still pick up some stuff that's flown in from wherever. And I wish I didn't. I wish I could get away from that. I think it's too readily available. The cost of, you know, those beans that have come in from Kenya, we don't know the farming that they've come from. We don't know who's picked them, whether they've been paid properly.
I'm so guilty of buying those. That was one of the things that was in my mind when you were talking.
Green beans from
those
Kenya.
Bloody beans. Yeah.
Yeah. My friend's just brought some. She's grown on her allotment in London. They're lovely. And she's grown cucumber, and she brought me some courgettes and some of her own potatoes. We're having a feast. She's got an allotment, so she's, you know, dedicated to that. But I understand not a lot of people have access to land to grow things. But if they did grow something, they might go a little bit of the way of understanding how hard it is to grow things, and then maybe look for British produce and support British farmers a bit more. That's what I would hope, rather than flying it. Yeah, it's tricky. I think the supermarkets have a lot to answer for, and they should be paying British farmers properly for the produce that we grow.
I mean, you don't pull any punches about how hard the farming life can be. Have there been times when you've wanted to walk away from it?
There have been times where I tear my hair out and think it's all a bit too much, but I've never wanted to walk away from it. I've never got in the car and driven and said, I'm out of here. No.
Because for a long time you were pursuing, it was James's dream, wasn't it? I mean, you talk the several times you say about the magnet pulling north back to the farm.
It wasn't that I didn't ever want to live on a farm. I didn't want the struggle. And I don't know if I've conveyed that. I think that struggle that I knew to get here of those several years of living on what essentially is a grand designs project with not enough money, no cameras, just mud and three young kids wasn't appealing.
Strangely.
And I am better at him at thinking ahead and visualizing what that's going to look like. He will think ahead and see the finished thing and then not think what the middle bit looks like and just think, oh, well, it'll be okay. We'll get there. And I see the messy middle and think a lot of that I'm going to be doing and he hasn't thought about this. So I didn't want that struggle and I lived it and we did it and it looks beautiful now. Don't get me wrong. It looks incredible where we are now. The farm is in rude health. The garden's gorgeous. We've just finished the driveway like 2 months ago after a building site of like 10 years around the house. And it's really, really nice. But it was tough. It was a challenge. And I think part of writing that out was me sort of reflecting on that and going, yes, it did. It was bad. it was hard in the snow. No electricity when that really bad storm hit and we were here and we hadn't finished things and yeah, really challenging. But you come out the other side of these things and I think that's what makes your life richer.
What point do you think, can you remember a point where you thought this is my dream too, this is our dream?
I totally took it on in the planning meeting when we got our planning permission. I totally took that this is us feeling on about the farm and then went through the messy middle. I would say in 2020, when I first started writing pieces for my book, I was spending a lot of time walking around the farm on my own, probably listening to a lot of your podcasts, Sam, and all sorts of other things, audio books. And I think, gosh, wow. This is incredible. We live here, pinch me. This is amazing. It's beautiful. It's peaceful. It's full of nature. I mean, we've got hares literally hopping through the garden or a red squirrel on the wall top regularly. We've got cuckoos. We've got curlew, heron, flocks of little birds all the time. everything's just, it was so incredible when I started just seeing what was right under my nose. It's that pausing in the doing. And then I was like, yeah, this is brilliant. Probably love it more than James does now.
I mean, you've written a lot about feeling invisible, not within the family and the community, but within wider society. And that feeling that you and your work and women like you have no value. But now in your mid-40s, how has that changed?
I'm confident in myself. I think I've always had, like I said before, I had that sense of self. And I feel happy and settled, and partly through writing the book, I've just let that go of feeling invisible and said that it doesn't really matter now. This is me. This is my story. This is who I am. This is what matters to me. And maybe I think I wrote the book I wanted to read maybe a few years ago when I was kind of a bit unsettled, thinking that it wasn't worthy enough. My goodness. I just love to pat her on the back and say, hang in there. It's going to be good.
Is that what drives you? Is that what gets you out of bed every morning?
I think it's love for the kids, love for James. That drives me, and keep doing the best we can here. Yeah, it does. Yeah, I would say all of that together.
There's something that you write that your dad said, and it really rang a bell with me, because my nan used to say this as well all the time, like, you make your bed and you lie in it. And exactly. It's so unhelpful, isn't it?
It's so unhelpful.
You have a different take on it, don't you?
Yeah, he was probably told that when he was...
I'm sure he was.
It was one of those sayings that gets, gosh, when things are bad, oh, well, you make your bed, you lie in it, get on with it. I mean, one of the worst times it was used was with James's grandma, and she actually left his granddad for a short spell. She'd found out something about him that she didn't want to know, and... anyway, her father had said to her at the doorstep, no, you make your bed, you lie in it, go back home. I mean, that's pretty horrific, isn't it? To be turned away from your family home. It's been used in such negative ways. I have a different take on it, in that the way I get up and I make my bed every day is a different day. It's a different project. It's something to get stuck into, whether it's I'm catering for a group on the farm, or I've got jobs to do that around, like with the sheep or with James, or it's in the house, or it's on the writing, or it's speaking to you on a podcast. There's something every single day I can make I'm in charge here. And I think that's what farmers have, is a sense of agency on their own, you know, on their farms. We can be our own boss, really, and I love that.
There's before I ask you the questions I always ask, I just one thing I want to, well, not really ask you, but just say, because it just really, really was so fascinating. It's literally in the last couple of sentences of the entire book before you get to all the useful recipes and stuff at the end, which is that the word mundane comes from the Latin word, my pronunciation might be, I'll be wrong, mundanus, which means of the world.
I mean, when it kind of just shifted everything, because we see chores as mundane, don't we, as drudgery, as something to be avoided at all costs. When you think the word mundane is of the world, it's everything. What is a good life if it's not caring and doing the tasks, the little things that for our loved ones, feeding them, nourishing them, keeping a clean home, making things pleasant, and generally just, I listened to an episode you did recently with Marina Benjamin, and she said there's something so rich about being entangled and enmeshed with the messy, dirty, joyful, loving, sad, everything all enmeshed with life. And I think that's what, it just shifted my perspective, understanding mundane as of the world. Made me feel very validated that everything it is mundane and it is important.
Yeah, that mundane isn't a negative. It's used as a negative, but it isn't.
And I'm interested in,
so interesting.
You know, like my art background and things, I'm always interested in flipping things and looking under the surface and what's the layers beneath things. And
I mean, I don't know when I think you'd have time, but do you do any artwork anymore?
I think that's probably going to be my next project that I'm going to try and get into making some pieces again. I did some embroideries for my degree show, and it's a while since I picked up the needle and thread, but I think there's things I'd like, you know, to weave in and say and create pieces again.
Do you still have the work you did for your degree show?
I do. Yeah.
Oh, you should put it on your Instagram. I'd love to see it.
It's quite subversive. It's quite sort of subversive stitch. It's quite shocking, some of the pieces about violence and undercurrents of things in society. It's a bit grim, some of it.
Well, I'd really love to see it.
Yeah.
Right. Questions that I always ask. What's your emotional age?
So I was thinking about this, and I think it's probably much older than I actually am. I think it's probably like, I've always felt a bit older than I am. It could be 80, I don't know. It could be something crazy like that. I'm not wishing my life away, but I just feel like I'm confident and happy in myself as if I would be when I'm that age. Does that make sense?
It totally does. But you see yourself still there when you're 80?
Around the farm or somewhere locally, yes. Absolutely. Making pieces of work or writing or doing things and cooking for groups and grandkids, maybe, who knows? Just a busy, interesting, colourful life. Yeah.
Give us a book recommendation. Oh, so it can be a book that's meant a lot to you.
I must have about 10 books that have meant so much to me. Circe by Madeline Miller. Hamnet by Maggie O'Farrell. The Unseen, the Other Side. I'm interested in the women's stories that aren't told, and that was beautifully done. Know My Name by Chanel Miller was powerful. I loved that memoir. And I've got Crane in H Mart by Michelle Zorner. I read that recently and that just blew me away. That was outstanding. About all Korean food and her relationship with her mum as her mum was dying. Really powerful. I love Educated by Tara Westover. I've just finished reading 12 Moons by Caro Giles, and I really loved the way she used the moon through each month. It was about looking after her four daughters as a single mum. That was really good.
I'm looking, one of the things I love about, I'm recording, you know, having the video so I can see you when we record the podcast, is nosing into the background. And we're not close enough for me to see what any of the books are, but there's miles of books behind you, which I love.
We're recording up in our office, which is at the end of the sheep shed, and it has those great big IKEA cubes, and they're all stacked full of books, both mine and James's, and the house is literally propped up with books as well. I love nosing around like you do on people's bookshelves, because I think that's their mind, that's what's in their mind. Those titles and those stories and those influences are what's inspiring them. Books are amazing, and I'm blown away that Faber picked my proposal up and went and decided to publish it, and feel very lucky.
Well, and it's a beautiful book as well. It's really what advice would you give younger women?
Be kind to yourself. Definitely be kind, and that's giving yourself a break, and don't try and do it all. Know that you need help. Ask for more help than you think. Yeah, don't try and do it all on your own. I think I did that a while, and give yourself a break. Go for a walk on your own. If you've got young kids, find some way of leaving them for half an hour and just be kind.
Who is your old bird role model?
She'd kill me for saying, because she's not an old bird, but mum definitely. She's a great role model. She's held on to who she is, and she's fun to be around, and she works incredibly hard and does 100 things for all of us all the time.
What's your superpower?
I think I'm a good container. I'm able to contain a lot of different things going on at once and a lot of emotions, and try and hold it all without breaking. I'm quite patient. And that's got better with age and more kids. I wasn't particularly like that with my first, but I definitely am much more patient and able to hold a lot more. And I would say that that's pretty much my superpower, that I can deal with a lot.
That's a hell of a superpower.
Thank you.
And probably an essential one.
I think it's fairly essential living my life, yeah.
And last one, how many fucks do you give?
Well, not so many about little things like appearance and getting older and wrinkles and all sorts of little things like that, or going to birthday parties and being seen, you know, doing all these things that people expect, that sort of superficial things. About the big things, I give loads of fucks. Drives me wild that the government isn't supporting food and farming in this country properly. I'm really passionate about leaving the land in better health than it was when we took the farm on, and how we can leave the world in a better place for our kids and grandkids. So there is a world. And about inequality, about, so many fucks.
Oh, thank you, Helen. Thank you so much. I've absolutely loved talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Sam. It's been a joy and a real honour to come on the podcast of something that I listen to. I think podcasts have been hugely important to me in finding where I am at 45 and looking back on my life. And lots of the conversations with the guests you have kind of being in around my head when I've been writing as well. So the work you do is incredible, and keep going. It's brilliant to listen to, and thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you. Well, I wasn't going to ask you this, but I am going to ask you now. Have you started to think about menopause? Yeah, where are you at?
Where
on
am
that
I at?
Spectrum?
So my youngest is 5, and I think having a baby at 40 maybe has masked things a bit, and nothing's really changing at the moment. But I am very aware of it. I've got friends that are going through it. Yeah, so it's on the horizon. So I'm kind of hoping that I won't lose all my marbles too soon. Able to get some good creative, use my energy that I've got now and not have.
You might not lose them at all. You never know.
It's probably going to happen. But I'm aware of it. And I think the conversations you have with women about this inform me, who's on the cusp of things, and all the books available now. It's a much more talked about subject, just like miscarriage wasn't ever talked about, was it? Menopause has never been addressed. And it's vital. We, as women, we all need to know much more and what's available to us and what can help us. And thank you for opening up those conversations as well.
Oh, thank you. I didn't ask you so you would say that, but thanks for saying it. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, you might also like the episodes featuring Marina Benjamin and Tamsin Kalidas. You'll find a link to them in the show notes. You can hear a new episode of The Shift each Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review and follow, because it really does help other people find us. And if you'd like more of The Shift in your life, head over to theshiftwithsambaker.substack.com and sign up for weekly newsletters, podcast extras and more.